Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here, a pleasure to have all of you here with us, especially our military people, as we're talking about some of the military things. I went to one of their sessions yesterday and found it very interesting. It's very similar to our sessions, small group of people talking about things that are of interest to them. So as we move into this transitional thing, we'll probably appreciate that. As indicated, I'm at the South Central Experiment Field in Hutchinson, Kansas. Originally, we were a 160-acre experiment field. We received a donation through the Kansas State University Foundation of approximately another 400 acres. And with that, we got into the conversion of conservation reserve land into irrigated research plots. In other words, 134 acres of that were in the foundation, are in the CRP program. Red Bargill Foundation is the one that donated that. It came to the university in 2004. Now, it was kind of an interesting deal to that. I started working for the university there at the experiment field in 1985. The first technician I hired wanted to know why we weren't using this other land that had this nice big plaque on it that said it belonged to the university. And I said, well, who does it belong to? It says the foundation. I told him, well, we'll never see that land because it'll be sold and the foundation will use it for income. Well, in 2004, I had to eat my words because we did get that piece of property. Part of the land, as indicated, was in Conservation Reserve Program, approximately 134 acres, and it came out of the Conservation Reserve Program in 2007. So we picked it up. And since then, we put an irrigation system that irrigates approximately 57 acres of that 134 acres on that land. This is the plaque that the individual was referring to. I later found out that George Red passed away in 1979. That's when the actual property was transferred, or not transferred to, but trusted to the foundation. It actually didn't come to the university until the last of the trustees passed away, and that happened in 2003, March of 2004. We took possession, if you will, of the property. And it also includes another 160 acres of dryland property that we're working with. So I tripled the size of our field in 1 year. How many of you can indicate that you've done that? It's not a pleasant experience. Some of the challenges we have here. We looked at drilling test wells, getting water permits, getting out of the CRP, arranging for electrical service, drilling the wells, finances, and signage. And believe me, this signage was more difficult than the rest of them. As far as drilling test wells, that just meant we were spending about $750 per test well. They come in with a drilling rig, drill a 4-inch well, and estimate based on the characteristics of the soil profile how much water is going to be in there. Now, we are on the Ark River river basin for water. Now, I call it the Arkansas River. I was told it'd be nice to call it the Ark River, and then you won't have to call it the Arkansas River. So I tell the people, we've been fighting Colorado for water from the river. And I tell them until they wake up and call it the Arkansas River, when they go to Colorado courts, the Colorado courts are going to say, we don't know what this Ark River is. Why worry about it? Water permits. Again, the people at the Equus bed were very helpful. We went through, filled out all the paperwork, and I was surprised at the amount of paperwork. And that's why I have paperwork, paperwork, paperwork. And you're still doing paperwork. Every month I have to measure the wells and turn in the water levels of the wells and all this kind of stuff, so it's still paperwork, paperwork, paperwork. They determine where the wells will be placed, even though we did do some preliminary work looking at the test wells where the significant water is. Their regulations will only allow you to place a well X number of feet from somebody else's well, X number of direction from somebody else's well. We are in an area that in the 1930s, they drilled a lot of oil wells. We have a lot of brine plumes. The reason we opted to do the CRP ground is it was out of the brine well area. We would have liked to have irrigated the other quarter, but it's in the Brimewell area, and we couldn't get permission to put a well on that particular piece of property. So the Equus Beds people were, again, very good to work with. Getting out of CRP. You laugh.
You did.
Well, we did, yes. We attempted to get permission to drill the irrigation wells prior to the end of the CRP contract. The offices that I approached and the offices in Manhattan that the foundation approached said, no, you can't get out unless you pay back our money that we've already paid you. That amounted to a little over $54,000. In other words, the cost of the system. Well, we said, okay, we'll wait. But we already had our permits, and because we had our permits, the time clock was running. We had to have the wells drilled within 5 years of the permit, and we had 5 years to establish our water base, and then we finally get a water right. In other words, we still don't have a water right. We've been at this for, 6 years? We still haven't established our water right. We'll do that in 2 years. But in any case, I went there, and they told us we had to pay all the money back. So the administrators in Manhattan said, well, we're not going to do that. We'll just sit back and wait. Good afternoon, or morning. Thanks for coming. I went to a meeting in Washington, D.C. It was the U.S. Canola Association, and we had our board of directors dinner one evening. And there was an individual there that had a name tag on it, says USDA, Conservation Reserve Program Administrator. So I approached him and talked to him about our problem. He said, go home and ask him again. So I went home and asked him again. They said, yeah, we can do that. Just write a letter of request to the board, county board. So I wrote a letter of request to the county board, and within a week we received permission to drill the wells on the CRP ground. So again, it's just a matter of paperwork, paperwork, paperwork. Arranging for electrical service wasn't a real big problem. Who has the right to provide the electricity? Midwest Energy has a three-phase line, transmission line, that runs right over the top of us. But we can't get electricity from them. Deregulation says we have to get it from Westar Energy. So we ended up approaching Westar Energy and got all the permits and everything for do that. The type of service that we needed 483 phase, independent contractors and local services had to be contacted because Westar will only bring the electricity to the transformer posts. The rest of it is your responsibility. With that, they put their transmission line in. And then KDOT got involved in the process, in other words, Kansas Department of Transportation. They came out and told Westar, your posts are on our right-of-way. 1 year later, and really 1 year later, in other words, I had already contracted the local contractor to put the underground service in underneath the highway over to our pivot system. 1 year later, they moved the posts from here to there. Yeah. Basically, that amounted to about a foot and a half move. But we finally got permission to tie onto their line and got our electrical services in. The soils on this particular property are a Farnham, and our Reno County Soil Survey was redone, and they've reclassified these things as different soils now than what they were. But basically, because we're in the Arkansas River Basin, they're alluvial soils, whereas they're sitting on top of a shale shelf, and depending upon what was in the river when the river decided to move out of there, is deposited there. So this particular piece of property is sand on the surface, and then we got a layer of gray clay, and then we have river sand. Some areas on the property, the shale is 25 feet from the surface. Some areas it's 42 feet from the surface. You know, makes a lot of difference in how much water you get from it. It looked similar to this when we first acquired the property. In March of 2004, we got it on March 4th. March 8th, I was sitting in a meeting with the NRCS people telling us that we had to get rid of all of these cedar trees that are on the property. In other words, we could no longer have this type of situation. We had to get rid of them like this. Some ecologists had decided that the hawks and the eagles and all this were sitting in these cedar trees and eating the mice and the rabbits and all this, that this environment was supposed to evolve. So we ended up going out there and removing all of these trees. And basically what we did is went through there with a shoulder-mounted saws and sawed them off and left them there and burned them. And I thought that would work real well too, but it didn't really burn the cedar tree. They were still laying there, so we ended up going out and picking it all up and getting it to where it looks similar to what we have here in this particular photo with the pivot set up on our system there. Again, we're irrigating approximately 57 acres with this pivot. It was in, as you can see, CRP grass. In 2005 and 2006, we did burn the CRP grass in the spring. In 2004, when we got the property, because of the paperwork and all the transitions and everything, we missed the final date for burning, so they wouldn't let us burn it in 2004. But again, regulations. This is what it looked like in the spring of 2008. We had a crop of corn there in 2007. It was dry land. The pivot was not supposed to be a pivot. Originally, it was supposed to be a linear move system. Well, the linear move systems with the price of iron, I don't know how many of you saw the price of iron. I started selling scrap iron off the field because I could buy things with the scrap iron. But in any case, it was supposed to be a linear move. The linear move systems went from about $50,000 to $125,000, you know, because of the extra steel. So we ended up with a center pivot system. But the corn was put in there as the first crop. And I don't know how many of you have dealt with CRP and conversion to CRP, but that corn crop was a disaster. I got blamed for the disaster, regardless of the fact that everybody has a disaster the first year out of CRP. But in any case, that's what it looked like then. You can see this corn stubble here, or the corn stalks from the previous year. You can also see the dead CRP grass here. We had a lot of grass that we didn't get killed the first year. This is what it looked like looking at where the pivot isn't and where the pivot is where we have it sprayed. So we did get good control the second year out of grass. Here's the pivot. Some of the problems we run into, the bunch grasses. If you harvest or plant soybeans on that the first year and try to harvest it with an all-crop head or a row head type situation, these bunch grass things like to ball up the knives on there. I spent more time off of the combine turning the head backwards, getting those bunches out of there. The same way here with the leftover pieces of cedar. They really like to get in there. Now, some of the cedar that we had cut off and were still laying there would get picked up and go through the head, but it wouldn't make the transition through the cylinder of the combine because it won't bend. It just sits there. So I would had the cab door open and everything, and I'd sit there until I started smelling this real strong aroma of that stuff burning. And I would get out and drop the concaves and pull the stuff out of there. Figured I didn't really need a combine fire, but I wasn't going to get out until I had to. And with that, this individual thought he had it made, and I think we've got it made, but I open the floor for questions. This is a real picture out in the real field. It wasn't made up.
Can you describe it?
I can't forget. Oh, okay. It's a international combine, not a John Deere or an Ellis Chalmers, an international. It's in a cornfield in northeastern Colorado, just south of Akron. And the individual had finished harvesting, left his combine and truck out in the field, and overnight there was a real strong south wind, and the whole front of the combine is just full of tumbleweeds.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Russian thistle. I thought that was quite interesting. But he was finished harvesting, so.
So you're now an expert at mitigating and working with the conservation reserve programs and all the ins and outs of it.
Okay, the question was if I'm an expert on working with the ins and outs of getting land out of CRP. Not really. I have talked with several people about this, and they had a meeting. Great Plains, our Colorado Conservation Tillage Association, had a meeting this February in Burlington, Colorado. And I went to one session that was called Sodbusters. And what they're doing in northeast Colorado, and it scares me to death, they're going back and getting the one-ways out of the tree rows and taking the one-ways, breaking up this sod as an initial tillage. They can't plow it because it messes up their cover requirements. But they'll take it, they'll one-way it, and then right behind the one-way, they're following with offset disc, and right behind the offset disc, they're going with a conventional tandem disc. You can imagine the setup that we're having there for potential dust storms and soil erosion and everything else. But that is the method that they found most economical to get the CRP out of the CRP program, or out of the grasses. My contention to them was, okay, why do that? And I tell the farmers in our area, if they know they're going to get the CRP out of CRP, go in there 2 years before, put on some nitrogen phosphorus fertilizers. Okay, you raise your eyebrows. This was supposed to be good for the ground and everything, right? But these grasses have been there for 20 years. If you take a soil sample, which we did on our CRP, the nitrate levels all the way down through run about 0.1. On our other soils over on the experiment field, we're running fours and fives. Okay, there is no nitrogen there for that crop to use. If you go in there 2 or 3 years before you take it out of CRP, apply your fertilizers and get that grass growing, you're only going to have basically one application of a burn down herbicide. The reason they're having to go with 2 or 3 applications of burn down herbicide is because that plant is sitting there growing without anything. It's basically a dead growing plant. Well, you can't kill a dead growing plant with the burn down herbicides. But if you get it into a vigorously growing plant, it'll absorb that herbicide and you don't have a problem. Oklahoma State found that the best way to get rid of the bunch grasses is to take a 55-gallon barrel, fill it with concrete, make rollers out of them, and roll it across. And that gets rid of your bunch grasses so you don't have the problem with your combines going over it. Questions, other questions?
What's major grass?
The major grass there would be Blackwell switchgrass would be one of the major. It's a blend of Blackwell switchgrass, bluegrass, blue stem, and some others. So it's not a particular, in other words, they had, back when they started that, they had a blend that you were supposed to plant. The question was, what is the major grass that we had to contend with?